Hi, I'm Ella Sean, reluctant romance writer and host of Enchanted Beast Podcast. Welcome to the Enchanted Forest.
Do you remember when you were in grade school and your teacher was trying to teach you about homophones? Those words that sound the same but have completely different meanings? I would always get them confused with synonyms. You know, the words that mean the same but don't sound the same at all. Why am I talking about homophones and synonyms and grade school? Stay with me. We really need to talk about it. Hello, my enchanted beast. How are you? This is Ella, and I am, as always, excited to be back in the Enchanted Forest with you. Okay, I really thought that this Mind Over Matter episode was going to be only like one take, right? But by the time I was done recording the original, it was like 2.5 hours long. And I thought to myself, there's no way in hell anybody is going to listen for 2.5 hours. So I broke it down. And so this week is kind of the rest of what I was talking about, right? I think we left off on, let me see, we left off on talking about the negative mind chatter. And I promised this week that we would get into understanding what it is that the mind wants you to know, right? There's something that your mind wants you to know. And this week, we're going to delve into it, and I'm going to get back to how we can use that sexual response cycle, how we can actually make it work for our benefit. I know. And so now, you know, I'm left with the question, why does my mind keep telling me no? And not no, N-O. No, my mind keeps telling me K-N-O-W. You need to know why this is not what you need to do at this moment, Ella, is what my mind is saying. It's what every woman's mind is saying. Know why I'm telling you no. Know why I am telling you to stop this right now. If you are in a safe, sane, consensual sexual relationship and your mind screams at you, no, then you need to listen. You need to adhere to what your mind and body are telling you, to what your mind is telling you. Know why I'm telling you no, Ella. Okay? I mean, again, going back to romance novels, you know, my treacherous body syndrome, TBS. I wrote an article about it on my blog. I'll make sure to leave a link in the description. Treacherous body syndrome. He was so into it. He was already hard.
he was already partially inside of me. I couldn't tell him no, even though something didn't feel right. What? Why not? Because you always have the right to say no, even if you are in the middle of it and he is almost getting ready to come. You have the right to say, nope, putting the brakes on. And he needs to respect that, right? I mean, some states have, of course, began this stupid law about, you know, well, if a woman is aroused and the man decides that, you know, yes, the woman is aroused and they're in the act, and then she changes her mind, then if a man continues, that's not rape. Some states have enacted that as law. Are you shitting me, America? But I guess, you know, when your president feels he's entitled to grab the vaginas of women because he is wealthy, then of course that law makes sense. But I digress. When your mind says no, even if your body is still swollen and pulsating and undulating and dripping wet, your mind says no, listen. And if you're in a safe, sane, consensual sexual relationship, your partner will respect that. But if you deny yourself, if you deny what your mind is saying to you, then you are negating the protective measures put in place to ensure you are a whole woman. Right? So as I'm thinking about this word, no, K-N-O-W, know why I'm saying no to you. That's what my mind is like, know why I'm saying no. When I'm thinking about this, you know, I'm kind of an acronym girl, right? So I'm like, why would my mind tell me no? Why would my mind tell me no? What does my mind want me to know about my sexual self, about my sexual needs, about what I am or am not getting from my partners? Like, what is it that my mind wants me to know that my body can't understand? So I thought, what words can I kind of get together and figure out some stuff? So no, for the letter K, I chose the word kink. Now, kink, everybody thinks they know about kink. Everyone thinks they, you know, they either have one or they don't. They think it's either deviant or amazing, right? But I'm like, everybody has this thing, right? Everybody has a thing that they like sexually that may or may not be weird, that may or may not be, you know, acceptable. I don't know. And please understand that anytime I'm talking about sex or sexual activity or sexual relations, anytime I'm talking about sex, I am always talking about it in a safe, sane, consensual environment. Always. Okay? So, kink. This is kind of a non-conventional sexual practice, right? Like this might be indulging in fantasies. It might be role play. It might be fetishes. It might be, you know, wearing a pamper. Who knows, right? It is something that is a little skew of what is considered straight, right? A kink is a bend, like something you can't really see around. And so you have what's called kink, and then you have vanilla, right? Everybody's like, oh yeah, I know this. I've read 50 Shades of Grey. I've read a lot of BDSM romance novels, yada, yada, yada. So whatever. Vanilla, straight, to the point. No add-ons, no toys, no lubricants, no tying up, no sensation play, no nothing. You're just, you know, a penis and a vagina. Boom. That's it. Right? Very vanilla. And then you have kink. And so I'm thinking, maybe your mind wants you to know that it's all right that you have some kink. It's all right that you want to explore your kink. that shit is what your mind is saying to you. Discover what you like sexually. Encourage your partner to discover their own kink. Your partner needs to be able to meet that need in you. Right? There's nothing wrong in a sexual relationship. That's what I've always said. Like, there can never be anything wrong, like, in a sexual relationship as long as it is safe, sane, and consensual. Like, there is nothing off limits sexually in a safe, sane, and consensual sexual relationship. And we all know it can't be consensual if one of the people is a minor. We all know it can't be consensual if one of the partners is an animal. We all know it can't be consensual if, you know, you're dealing with someone who is mentally impaired, right? It's not safe if someone has been coerced. It's not safe if someone has been groomed. It's not safe if someone, you know, has been blackmailed. Like, so we understand safe, sane, consensual, then everything's on the table. Everything should be open. Everything should be available to explore. What if the woman has this thing she really wants to explore? She's kind of like, ooh, I really wouldn't mind my man tying me up to the bed, blindfolding me and pouring hot wax on my tits. Like, what if that's what she wants to explore? But of course, the last time she told her man about it, he was like, are you crazy? That's some nasty ish you want me to do. And so what if her mind is saying, stop. If he can't respect your kink, if she can't respect your kink, like if your partner can't respect your kink, then they can't respect you. And why are you giving them what they need, but they're not giving you what you need? Right? So, because we're talking about know here, knowledge, right? Know your kink. And know that you have a right to explore that within your relationship. And if your partner isn't willing to explore that with you, then perhaps you're with the wrong partner. Okay? So, narrative. What is a narrative? It is a spoken or written account of connected events. It's a story. To me, sex is just another way to tell a story, right? For me, sex is just another way to create a story, to pin a flow of connected events. It is a story within itself, as evident by the sexual response cycle. You have your introduction, your rising action, your climax, your falling action, and resolution. It is a story. Every sexual encounter is a story. We have, when we're talking about like appealing to audiences, right? You can appeal to the emotion, pathos. You can appeal to the logic, right? The ethos. You can appeal to the sexual, the eros, right? So sex is an erotic story appealing to the sexual creature living in our solar plexus chakra. Why the hell would you not want to appeal to that sexual energy living there in our sacral chakra? It's the beginning of all creativity. If your sexual relationships don't look like epic poems, right? You need another writing partner. From phase one to phase four, it needs to be as fulfilling as reading. Hell, Ames Brisé. My first romance novel. You need to be plugged in from the beginning to the end, and you need to be salivating at the end, waiting, waiting. When the hell is book two coming, Ella? I need to see what's going to happen with John and Vivian. That is what your sex story needs to be like for you every time. Every time. From the moment the excitement phase begins, which happens way before the bedtime, the plateau moment, way before that, you need to be sucked in to the story of your sex life. There needs to be no doubt about what happened, why it happened, nor that you definitely want it to happen again, right? So think about, you read a really great book and you know that there is a second book coming out. It's not out yet. You're anticipating, you've pre-ordered. You are ready for this freaking book to come out so you can see how the story continues. That needs to happen at the end of every sexual response cycle. Once it has been, you know, resolved and you and your man or your woman, you guys are like hugged up on each other, those oxytocin's flowing, the dopamine's flowing, the serotonin's flowing, the, you know, the adrenaline's passed on, but all those warm, cozy feelings are there. You feel loved, you feel secure, you feel safe, you feel cared for, and you're thinking, when is the next time we're going to climb this mountain together again? When's the next time? You're always in an excited state. That's the narrative of your sex story. You are always in a state of excitedness. Just thinking about it. Remembering the sounds, the way it felt, the smells. His skin against your skin. Her lips against your nipples, right? You are always in an excited state. Just waiting for it to jump off again. Right? You read M's Brisset, Broken Souls. You're excited, constantly sitting on the edge, waiting for book two. That's the story of your sex life. That's how it needs to be. O, openness. This is a lack of secrecy or concealment. It's frankness, right? Openness. If you cannot be open with your sexual partner about pretty much everything, you are with the wrong person. There is no lock on you when you are in a loving, safe, sane, consensual sexual relationship. There is nothing held back. There is nothing kept from you, and you keep nothing from them. There's no judgment. There's no chastisement. There's no condemnation, unless that is your kink, right? Unless that's a part of what gets you going. But if it's not, then there's no place for that. Open. Sex is fun. There needs to be joy in the act. It's exciting. It needs to be liberating. There needs to be a sense of freedom. Right? When we're in an arousal state, nothing, when we're aroused, nothing should seep into our brain that makes us second guess why we are getting sweaty and naked. Right? There's no room for negative mind chatter. There's no room for non-erotic thoughts. There shouldn't be any room for any of that, because there isn't room for closed-mindedness. Right? When you and your partner are on the same page and you are 100% committed, 100% open, 100% invested in each other's pleasure, in creating intimacy, right? Not just racing to the orgasm, not just feeling the pump and grind and thrust and push and pull, no, not that, but creating intimacy, when that is the number one goal of your sexual relationship, then oh my God, you are completely open to each other. You are vulnerable with and for each other. Right? There's no inhibition. There's no, oh my God, I can't believe I just queefed. I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed. No. It's, oh my God, I can't believe I just queefed. I can't believe I'm this wet, but I'm so glad I am. Or it's, oh my God, I can't believe I just queefed. Did you hear that? Because that's where we are. Sex is joy. It's light. It's fun. It's intimate. It's intense. Let your freak flag fly and all that jazz. Be open with each other. Right? The last letter in the word no is W. I'm not going to front. I had a hard time coming up with something for this. I was like, narrative, words, narrative. Yeah, words are used to write stories. No, 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 that doesn't make it work. Sex should be work. No, no, not wanted to be work. Sex is play. So then I was like confused. I had a hard time coming up with something for this. But then it hit me, wonder. Wonder. The desire to be curious, to know something, feel admiration and amazement, marvel, a feeling of suspense, surprise mingled with admiration caused by something beautiful, unexpected, unfamiliar, or inexplicable. I just went all kinds of word nerd girl on y'all. I'm sorry, I didn't even announce it. It just kind of crept up on me. I didn't realize I was doing it. Wonder. Do you remember the first time you kissed someone with tongue? Right? The first time you kiss someone with tongue. I'm going to be honest with you. The first time I kissed someone with tongue, I was in my mom's living room. It was the spring break of my junior year in high school. And my then boyfriend was coming over to say goodbye because I was going up to Charlotte, North Carolina to spend the week with a family friend, an older family friend, so that I could babysit her son for her. And my boyfriend, we had not kissed before at all because we had really just started dating. And he came by and to say goodbye to me. And we had been looking at TV, we were talking, yada, yada, yada. And it was time for him to go. And I was like, what if he wants to kiss me? I don't know how to do it. I've never kissed anyone before. I was a late bloomer, guys. I was so, like, yeah, I was like 16 and maybe I was 17 at that point. Yeah, it was spring break. I was 17. I had never kissed a boy, not with tongue. And so I was standing there and he had his arms around my waist. I had my arms around his neck and he was like, Ella, I'm going to kiss you. And I was like, yes. He didn't ask, right? I thought that was pretty hot. And I said, okay, but listen, I've never done this before. I don't know what I'm doing. And he gave me this beautiful white tooth smile. And he's like, don't worry, I got you. I was so curious and I was amazed. Like, we had kissed with closed mouth before, so I knew what his lips felt like. They were soft but firm. But I was surprised when I felt his tongue on my lower lip. And I thought, oh my God, I didn't expect it to feel that way. And then I was even more surprised when I felt his tongue along the seam of my lips. It was unfamiliar when I opened for him. and he slid his tongue in my mouth, I was like, wow, this is beautiful. This is wow. That's what sex needs to be every time you and your partner engage. It doesn't matter if you've been having sex with the same person for the last 30 years, for the last 3 years, for the last 3 months. It doesn't matter. There needs to be a sense of wonder and amazement every time you come together in a sexual way. Intercourse, oral, kissing, heavy petting, toys, play, sexting. There needs to be a sense of wonder every time, because it's about the anticipation, the feeling of getting something new and different that makes sex so awesome, right? If the sense of wonder has left you during sex, fix that shit immediately. If you're not still getting butterflies at the thought of having him inside you, fix it. If your partner doesn't look at you like it's the first time he's ever seen you, she's ever laid eyes on your form, fix it. It is the wonder of sex that creates the intimacy, right? You have to find a different story to write. You have to be open to experimenting. Toys, games, props, hell, other people, I don't know. You have to be willing to do whatever it takes to bring the wonder back to your sexual relationship. Because if you don't, if you can't, your mind is always going to say, no, this isn't right. This isn't good for you. This isn't going to make you feel the way you want to feel, the way you should feel, the way you are supposed to feel after it's over. We need to understand why our mind says no. And we need to heed that so that we're able to open up dialogue with our partners. Know why your mind is saying no, even when your body says, okay, let's get this over with. Right? So, I'd be remiss and wrong if I went through all these phases of sexual response cycle and I told you how they are all messed up and that, you know, you need to move on and do something different, right? If I didn't say what to do different, right? Now, again, I am no sexologist, so don't hold me accountable if you try this stuff and something goes wrong. I'm just giving you my opinion based on my research, okay? But yeah, how do we build excitement? So this kind of is a list that I comprised from like my own self, like my own knowledge, my own ideas of what I like, what I consider to be wonderful forms of foreplay. I went and I got some stuff from Oprah Online Magazine. I got stuff from Psychology Today. I put a link to all the resources that I used, right? So how do we build excitement? Remember I said that the excitement phase needs to be an ongoing, continuous thing, right? You need to be excited 24/7, and that's like the beginning state of arousal, right? So you need to always be on the edge of arousal all day, every day. Why not? Hell, that's a great feeling. You're getting little bursts of dopamine, little burst of like anticipation, little burst of serotonin, little burst of, you know, oxytocin. So you're just like a happy bitch every day if you're stuck, you know, if you're always in a state of arousal. But not like I'm walking around having, you know, a million orgasms. That is a disorder, and God, I couldn't imagine having it. I mean, I won't lie. Sometimes I can just orgasm from walking around. And I don't know what that means or what that says about me. But it's not pleasurable. Like, it's not like the orgasms you have when you're with your partner or when you're masturbating. But to just be walking around and then all of a sudden, oh God, wait, I'm coming. Or to be sitting for a minute and then you get up and then boom, you have an orgasm. So I have that. So I guess I never told anybody about that. And holy shit. But anyway, not that. I'm not talking about being in a state of arousal so that you're like constantly having orgasms, but that little hum, right? That little hum that just kind of vibrates under your skin and lets you know you're alive, right? That state of excitement, that's where we want to be 24/7. So how do we build that? How do we nurture that? How do we keep that going? Right. And again, I'm saying, yes, as a woman, usually and in heterosexual relationships, I'm a heterosexual. So that's what I know most. But I am not going to assume anything because you know what happens when we assume. But I'm going to say heterosexual, homosexual, it doesn't really matter because relationships are relationships. And there's always going to be one partner who's getting more out of something sexual than the other partner. Right. And since my show is geared towards Enchanted Beast, I'm going to say that, you know, for the most part, a woman's a lot more conscious of her sexual self than, and her partner's sexual self. So there's always kind of that, I'm going to stoke fires, right? But most times, us men don't understand that stoking the fire before you lay down in bed is the best way to get your girl to do all kinds of nasty shit, right? So anywho, how to build excitement. Kind words. Speak kindly to and about each other. And this is so huge. I don't think people understand this, but spoken words are like messages to the universe that set your intentions. That lets her know what your intentions are towards whatever it is you're talking about, right? So even if I'm not talking to my partner, or with my partner, if I'm simply talking about my partner, I'm speaking kind words because the universe is giving that back to my partner, right? But when I'm speaking with and to my partner, then I want to speak kindly. I want to let him know that I appreciate him, that I adore him, that I am enamored with him, that I think he's sexy, that I love the way he looks, I like the care he takes with himself, right? I am constantly speaking kindly to, for, about, with my partner, right? Send kind text messages, not sexed messages, but just kind text messages. Thinking of you, have a great day, love you. Heart emoji, kiss emoji, right? Compliment your partner. Make them sincere, but compliment. You know how good it feels to just receive an arbitrary compliment? Usually if I'm out and about and I see someone who, you know, I see a woman who's beautiful, I have to, excuse me, I just wanted to stop and tell you that you're absolutely gorgeous. I love your style. And the way the face lights up, the eyes are like a little bit shocked and surprised. And then it's like, oh my God, thank you so much. I can't even tell you how much I needed to hear that. Or I see a guy and I'm like, I just have to stop and tell you, I love your beard. I love how neat you are. You are so working everything that's going on with you. Surprise, shock, big smile. Thank you. Wow, I wasn't expecting to hear any of that, right? Why aren't we complimenting our partners? Why aren't our partners complimenting us? Why in our safe, sane, consensual, sexual relationships are we not complimenting each other? Babe, I absolutely love the way you kiss. Everything about how you touch me is perfect. Thank you. Right? So kind words. Pay attention. Don't wait for them to tell you what they need and or want. Oh my God, this is so huge. To know that someone has paid such close attention that they're able to anticipate what I need, what I want, and vice versa, huge turn on. To be sitting and working, knowing I'm hunched over my laptop, I'm writing, I've been at it for hours, so much so I haven't had a bathroom break, I haven't eaten, I haven't had anything to drink, I'm just like hunkered down in the writing zone, and all of a sudden, there's my favorite mug with my favorite tea, and some sliced fruit and crackers. And cheese. No sound, no nothing, just there. And then, oh my God, thank you so much. In my mind, you're so getting laid tonight, right? Because not having to get up and ask, not having to remind, just knowing that the attention is paid. Knowing that his focus is on me, my focus is on him when no one is watching, when we're not even paying. I'm not aware that he's focused on me. He's not aware that I'm focused on him, but we are focused. That's amazing. Listening when there are no words spoken, gaining understanding through my nonverbal cues and vice versa. Pay attention. Sexually, pay attention. Know what it does to me when you kiss me on the back of my shoulder. Notice how I break into goose flesh when you rub my collarbone. Right? These are the things that build and maintain excitement. The non-sexual touch, simple touches throughout the day. It's so stimulating, right? Just a finger dragged across the nape of my neck. Quick scalp rub, rubbing circles on the back of my hand, arbitrary, because you know, you can't just help but touching me. Like just knowing I am always being touched. Not sexually though, right? I'm in the kitchen cooking. He walks up behind me. He needs to get to something. His hand is on my hip while he's reaching in the cabinet because he just can't not touch me. I'm sitting on the sofa crocheting a blanket. His big toe runs up my leg. Why? Because that's the part of me he can reach. Because he needs to touch me. That goes such a long way. Right? Now, dancing. Spend time in each other's arms. Do you remember going to that high school dance? Like the one after the football games? Right? And you're in the cafeteria, the DJ's playing the music, the lights are off, it's scrubbing, and you are like bumping and grinding on the dance floor. You have sweated out your hair. Right. Of course, the next thing on your mind is getting naked and sweaty and wetter. Dancing with or without clothes on, with no indication of sex. Just dancing, just holding each other. Close, swaying to the music, touching each other, feeling each other, allowing your hearts to beat together. Dance. kissing with or without tongue. Holy cow. I think the art of kissing is so lost. It's so intimate. It's so beautiful. The kissing is so amazing. For me, it's more intimate than even intercourse. Right? Making out with no plans of taking it further. It's just fun. Going out into your garage when the kids are asleep, getting in the back seat, and making out like you did when you were teenagers. That is fun. Leaving hickeys in discreet places. Why wouldn't you do that? It's sexy. It's fun. It's inviting. It keeps that excitement, that hum right under your skin. Sensation play. A lot of people associate that with, like, you know, BDSM lifestyle, but, you know, whatever. You don't have to be full-fledged BDSM to enjoy sensation play. Think about how good it feels, you know, to have a massage with heated oil. Now, have something like that with your partner. Maybe you have a feather tickler. Maybe you have a fur glove, faux fur. We're not killing animals to get sexy, right? But you have a faux fur glove. Maybe you have, I don't know, something a little more risque. Maybe you like hot wax. Maybe you want to do ice and fire play. Maybe you like the feeling of something a little spiky going over your skin. I mean, it doesn't always have to be pleasurable. Maybe you enjoy a little bit of pain and you want that type of sensation play. Maybe you just like feeling silk scarves right up and down your body. Maybe you like having your sight removed, your sense of hearing taken away. Right? No rules. Safe, sane, consensual, sensation play. Maybe you want to be tied up so that you can't touch anything. And you're at the mercy of your lover. And then there's no sex. Just heightening your senses. Tantric sex or tantra. It involves slowing sex down and enjoying all of the build-up to the main event. This is amazing. I've not ever tried it. It's something I've always wanted to do. But I mean, it takes that excitement phase. It could last for 2 weeks before you actually ever engage in phase two. Right? It's about enjoying each other, increasing the intimacy. It takes sex from physical and emotional to spiritual and transformative, because that's really what sex is for. Sex is a spiritual practice designed to transform two persons into one. And I say that again, sex is a spiritual practice designed to transform two persons into one. It involves sacrifice, which of course shares its etymological origins with the word passion. Sharing breath, sharing touch, sharing movement. Tantra can take up to a week, 2 weeks, a month, however long you want to extend it before you ever hit intercourse. You learn to embrace intimacy, to build intimacy, trusting each other, to make it to the end together. Not one before the other, not one without the other. The focus is not on the orgasm, but on the intimacy and the spiritual connection cultivated through sexual transformation. Who doesn't want that? Who doesn't need that? Right? Now, I was on Oprah, and this guy said, you know, his name is O'Reilly. I have no idea who he is. I'm assuming he's a sexologist. And he says, you know, to extend the excitement phase, something to do in foreplay, he calls it the pussy pocket. I'm not lying. That's what he calls it. Basically, all right, it's cupping. It's where your partner cups your vagina in his or her whole hand and pleasures you that way. But it's a very dominant move. It's very much a staking of claim, of ownership, of saying, this is mine. I own this. I own the pleasure that comes with, from, and for this. This is my responsibility to take care of. I'm a beast. Lilith rolls with me on the daily. And I'm not going to front. That idea of being with a mate who is confident and competent enough to claim ownership and responsibility for and to my sexual excitement, my sexual pleasure, my sexual transformation. Hell yeah, bring it on, pussy pocket. I'm down. I love it. That makes me happy. I can get behind that. I can say to the feminists, you know, who are saying to me, oh my God, Ella, that is so horrible. You're putting women back 50, 60 years. I don't care. Own that. My beast was purring when I read that. Lilith was like, yes, that's amazing. We like that, pussy pocket. I'm down. That's all I'm saying. I love the idea of it. It's great. I'm going to put a link to the complete article on Oprah's magazine in the description. Read it. It's fabulous. Thank you, Mr. O'Reilly, whoever you are. Right? So, you know, we've extended excitement. We know how to keep it going all day, every day. What do we do when we're going to be climbing that plateau? How can we make it last? Women, this is not us. We need to figure out how to help our men make it last. So, edging. Getting to the edge of orgasm and backing off. Right? The best way to master edging, according to this article on fatherly.com, is to know thyself. It's through masturbation. So encourage your man to masturbate. There's nothing wrong with it. It's healthy. It's wonderful. It's the best way to get to know your sexual self, right? To build sexual stamina. You don't get mad when he goes for a run. Don't get mad when he's in the bathroom waking off. It's fine. It doesn't mean he doesn't want you. It just means, hey, we all have to take care of ourselves, right? That's a part of sexual health. But it's extremely helpful in learning how to edge, to stave off orgasm, right? So once your man is competent with edging, then he'll know what to do. Right? So encourage that. Masturbate. And when you feel like you're getting ready to come, then of course you stop stroking. Take a couple of deep breaths. Recalibrate. When it's calmed down, you get right back in there and keep going. Now, some resources say that with edging, and women can do this too, right? Women can stave off an impending orgasm. And it's the same practice, right? You masturbate, you feel like you're getting ready to have an orgasm. You stop touching, you stop moving, you stop using your vibrator, whatever you're doing. And then once you calm down, you get back to it, right? So there's some research that says that if you practice edging with, you know, by yourself and with your partner, that once you allow the orgasm to happen and you orgasm together, it's intense, crazy intense, because you have been edging and backing off, edging and backing off, edging and backing off. It's like conflict on conflict on conflict on conflict. And when it comes to a head, it's like, holy cow, are you kidding me? Right? The writer in me is like, that's crazy, boy. That's going to build amazing suspense. And that's going to ramp up my story so that my reader's going to be so into it that when it all comes to a head, they are going to pass out. Similarly, right? With sex, if you keep edging, keep edging, keep edging, finally, when you get to the climax, you are going to pass out. You might squirt. Ladies, you might squirt. Edging. I like it. So you might want to induce or introduce what's called a cock ring to your man, right? And the ring is worn around, you know, the base of the penis, or it could possibly be worn over the boys, like over the balls. But the whole idea is the cock ring fits over the penis. It's not painful. It shouldn't be, not unless it's your thing, right? Maybe your man likes a little bit of pain and that's, you know, that's what he wants, right? So you squeeze him over the base of the penis and it's a little tight and he's like, yes, that's it. Or maybe he likes it, you know, wrapped around his nads really tightly and he's like, yes. But if pain is not what you guys are into, then of course it really shouldn't be painful and it doesn't cause any problems if it's used as directed. So it's a safe situation, right? But what it does is it restricts blood flow into the penis, which will help the erection stay longer, right? It also helps if you put it around the testicles. There's like a tell, right, when guys are getting ready to come, so their testicles draw up close. But if you have like the cock ring around the testicles, then they can't draw up. So it can stave off orgasm. So squeezing, like that's a very old method, right? You squeeze the base of the penis right next to the glands, and that will help stave off orgasm as well, right? Prolonging the climb on the plateau. That recovery period that guys have to go through, women not so much, but guys, like after an orgasm, guys need, you know, some time to recover before they're able to become erect again. Well, research says if your guy wanks one out in the shower before the act, right? Or if you help him out with that before you get to, you know, your whole situation, the whole plateau part, then he's already taking care of that recovery time so that when he's like, because he's already, you know, you're already in a good state of excitement that you're hanging out in 24/7. So while he's stoking that and building that and making sure that he's, you know, allowing your mind to be flooded with all those great natural, you know, hormones and chemicals, so that there's not going to be any negative chatter, not going to be any of that non-erotic thought. So while he's taking care of that and you're taking care of that for him, then now he has this kind of, I'm back and I'm better, right? Because he got that one off and he's good to go, so he can handle everything else and he'll be able to maintain longer climb in the plateau. Slow down. Yes, I get it. Sometimes you don't have time to slow down. Sometimes all you have time for is a good, fast, hard, quickie. And it's just like, get it in, get it out, make it happen. Yes. Sometimes those are great. I like those sometimes, right? They're fun if they're not the only thing you have. Because the more friction, the faster a guy's going, the sooner he's going to come. It's just the way the cookie crumbles. So slow down. Take some time to enjoy the push, the pull. I hate the word thrust. And you know why. Slow down. Fast and Furious is great for movies, but that's all. Okay? Because if we can slow it down, right? Then we are going to build a lot more intimacy. We're going to be breathing together. We're going to have heart to heart. We're going to spend time looking into each other's eyes. We're going to spend time kissing and touching. We are going to engage in what can only be described as blissful sexual intercourse, right? Sexual positions. Now, I'm all for changing positions during sex, right? And when I say like during sex, I mean before anybody has an orgasm. I think it's great to try 2, 3, 4 positions if you can get them in. Because what happens is when you're changing positions, you are essentially staving off orgasms. You're giving your body and your partner's body a chance to kind of come down for a couple of seconds before you get back at it, right? So changing positions is great during one sexual response cycle. That's amazing, right? So I was, you know, I'm a research. And I found this article. I think it was a different article on Psychology Today, but it's like there are 4 positions that help a man last longer. Or maybe this was in fatherly.com. I think it was. But there are 4 positions that help a man last longer. Spooning. That's when the man's behind the woman and you're both on your side. He's entering from behind. This works really well because like he can't really go very fast or he'll fall out, right? Because it's kind of a precarious position to be in. And, you know, it doesn't allow for deep penetration at all. So it forces your guy to move slowly. Or, you know, if your girl is strapped, then it forces slower, shallow penetration. You're wrapped around each other, your heart, your partner's heart, right? Like, there's intimacy there. Crisscross applesauce. This is like sitting, right? So the guy's sitting down, crisscross applesauce, and the woman sits on top of him, crisscross applesauce, with her back to his front. Again, it's a really interesting concept because he can't do anything. He doesn't have the power of his legs to help him, you know, push in or whatever. And it, the only moving that's taking place is what she's doing, right? The woman's in control. And it keeps things really nice and slow because she doesn't have the power of her legs to move either. So it's really kind of like, you know, very slow and intimate. It's probably a little deeper this way, but still it's a slow deepness and it builds the intimacy. Cowgirl or reverse cowgirl, right? Again, woman controls this. It's deep in most cases, but she controls this. And if the guy can control himself and not, you know, when to go and thrust up while she's handling her business, then it again creates intimacy and all of that. And then the 4th one is anything that's not his favorite. Every man has a favorite position. Why? Because it feels good and it gets him there faster. I would venture to say most guys would say my favorite position is doggy style. Most guys would go doggy style. They would go doggy style. Because why not? You get the full view of everything and you are in 100% control. It is a very dominating position. If you're a spanker, you have access to that. If you are a hair puller, you have access to that. If you enjoy anal play, you have access to that. Right? If you enjoy, like, you know, dominating, then you have access to hold down your partner. If these things are a part of what you consider safe, sane, consensual sex, most guys are going to go doggy style. And that's cool. But if you want to make the climb up the plateau last longer, giving your partner you know, more opportunity to reach orgasm with you, then of course you want to do anything that isn't your favorite position. Try her favorite position, right? So, yeah, that's kind of where we are with getting the plateau and climbing it slowly, slow and steady. That's how we make it last and get everybody there together. So reaching the climax, this, we've talked about it, right? The excitement and the plateau. If we can work to get the excitement stage or the phase of excitement that lasts all day, every day, so we're in a perpetual state of blissed out, humming excitement under our skin, right? And we figure out how to make the climb of the plateau better, slower, more intimate. Reaching the climax is a no-brainer. I mean, women take about 20 minutes, maybe up to 40 minutes, before they're able to reach an orgasm. Only about 15 to 20% of women say they've never achieved an orgasm, ever, not even on their own. Most women don't come from penetrative sex. Like, they just don't. Most women need clitoral stimulation in order to have an orgasm. Some women can have penetrative orgasm. Some women can have cervical orgasms, vaginal orgasms, whole body orgasms, right? That requires a lot of all that stuff that we talked about, right? Building the excitement and making sure the headspace is squared away. Because women harbor negative attitudes, feelings, and fears about sex, some women may harbor, because of our society, because of their culture, right? Because of religion, because of whatever, right? Past experiences, there's going to be that negative chatter. So that's why the excitement phase is so important. That's why the building up towards the plateau is so important. That's why the resolution is so important, to negate that negativity that might be kind of constant in the minds of women. But here's the thing. Most men have no idea where a woman's clitoris is. Most men have no idea what a vulva is. Most men have no idea that the vagina is an internal organ and that what they see on the outside is not the vagina. Most men have no idea what a woman's sexual anatomy is. Teach him. Sit somewhere. Open your legs and help your man figure out where everything is, what everything is, how everything works together. And if you're one of the women who has no idea what her vagina and her vulva and all the minds and all the wonderful things are, you need to get a mirror and you need to get acquainted with yourself. If you're one of the women who are harboring this, oh my God, I can't touch myself, I can't masturbate, it's disgusting, it's a sin, you need to get in touch with your body. You need to know what feels right for you, right? We lotion ourselves. We believe in moisturizing religiously because we want to protect our skin. Stop making it so clinical. When you are moisturizing, take note of how you feel when you touch certain parts of your body. When you're showering and you're cleaning and you're shaving or you're waxing, whatever, take note of how you feel. Is there a tingle? A little tickle? Do you like it? Is there a buzz when you touch your nipple? What happens when you squeeze it harder? You have to own your own sexuality. You have to own your own body, right? Before you can share it with anybody, you have to own it, right? But then once you own it, make sure your man knows what's happening down there, right? So he's not just plundering blindly. Most men don't know what it takes for a woman to orgasm because they don't know any part of the woman's body. You have to educate them. You have to show them what happens, how things work, how you work, how your body works, how your entire body, mind, spirit, and emotional stuff work together to get you to that freaking orgasm. How to extend it, how to make sure you can have multiple ones, how he can have multiple ones. Get in touch with your bodies. Be open with each other. Nothing to be ashamed of, as long as your relationship is based, right? SSC, safe, sane, consensual. I don't know. I hate that we are in a society that represses sexuality, that doesn't believe that it's a spiritual practice, that it's a necessity for life, that it's a necessity for well-being, right? So, we've talked about phase 1, 2, 3. Now we're at my favorite part. I know, sounds weird. Phase 4, resolution. The ending is always the best part. It needs to be the best part, right? Because the ending is never really an ending. It's just the beginning of something else. It is my favorite part. My two favorite parts of the sexual response cycle, phase 1 and phase 4. I enjoy phase 2 and 3. I love phase 1 and phase 4. You know, this idea of aftercare, I've talked about it in previous episodes back in season 1. This idea of aftercare, it is as much about physical comfort as it is about emotional comfort. Once the body has reached orgasm, it's like the turning point in a book. All that conflict, all that tension, all that suspense, all that angst, it has to resolve. It has to go back to status quo. That's a lot of chemicals and hormones that need to be dissipated from your body. If it was intense, you've been edging through a 30-minute plateau climb, and you finally climax together. That's intense. You don't have to practice BDSM to have intense sessions of sex, right? If you've been building the excitement phase for 2 weeks and you haven't touched each other's genitals at all, you've just been building excitement, and then you get to a 30, 40, 50, 60 minute plateau climb with edging, and you finally allow yourself to reach that climax. That is intense. Think about how many chemicals and hormones have been flowing through your body this whole time, and then you reach this crazy release, and now you're like, what? Shook and shattered. Aftercare. Your adrenaline rush is seeping out of you. You might go into shock. It's important that you're warm, that you are cared for, that there is a constant amount of touching, loving, kind, soothing words, that you are hydrated. Perhaps even you have something to eat, to nibble on, right? That you are being reassured, that you are reassuring that you guys are all right, that you went through it together. You are in there together. This is where that safe, sated, warm, I am loved, I am cared for feeling takes root. This is where a woman is not left feeling unsatisfied or used. This is where negative mind chatter about sex and arousal is rooted out. There's no room for it at all. This is where partners ensure that their needs, each of their needs, were met. This is where you guys can agree that what happened in that session is exactly what you wanted to happen. And both people are left feeling loved, safe, nurtured, cared for, understood, supported, right? Nothing is done to reignite that high level of arousal, but when you share an intimacy like this, that excitement phase, that nice blissful hum that resides under the skin, it just stays there, giving you just the right amount of dopamine and serotonin and oxytocin to ensure that you stay feeling connected and happy and accomplished. The ending is the best part. When you read an amazing book and you get to the ending and it was like, oh my God, it didn't let me down. It's exactly what I thought was going to happen. No, that's not what we want. I didn't think it was going to be like that, but oh my God, it didn't let me down. It just left me feeling like I want more because it was good, not because I didn't get what I needed. That's what we want. Right? That's what we want from our sex. Well, I'm happy that I got to that. Woo! This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed doing this podcast episode, talking about this entire sexual response cycle and how the mind over matter conflict. Guys, you gotta listen. Your mind wants what's best for you. Your mind and your body, they work to protect your emotional self, spiritual self. So know why your mind is saying no when you are in the throes of passion and it doesn't feel right for you, right? So thank you for joining me in the Enchanted Forest. I trust you enjoyed your time. I'd love to hear from you. So you can use the Anchor app and you can call into the show and leave me a message. And of course, I will import those into the show and answer any questions or address anything or allow them to be a part of the next show. If you have already followed me on my other social medias, if you haven't, then please be sure to do so. I'll leave some links in the description box. If you enjoy what you are hearing, then I would love to have you as a sponsor. And so you can do that. I'll leave a link for that as you're listening to my show. And I will be sure to give you a big giant shout out during the show as a sponsor. So that would be cool. Thanks for supporting me as a podcaster, as a blogger. As a writer, there's a link in description box so that you can, you know, buy my books. Actually, right now, until the 17th, which is tomorrow, you can get a free ebook of M's Brisset, Broken Souls, on Amazon. It's a promotion that I was running, so make sure you go out and get that. And if you participate in the free ebook promotion, please read it and then leave me a review. That's super duper important. I also have an online merch shop that just kind of, you know, celebration of all things romantic, all things beastly, and all things naughty. It's just me, very enchanted. So that's it. I'm Ella. It's been amazing. hanging out with you guys. I want to remind you until next time to be brave, be beautiful, and stay enchanting. Bye.
This has been Ella Shawn with Enchanted Beast Podcast. Thank you for joining, and remember to stay enchanted.